Good evening and welcome to this live telephone town hall. We appreciate you joining us this evening. Right now we have a telephone town hall that we're going to be presenting information on the California High Speed Rail Authority Burbank to Los Angeles project section, and we are going to be answering your questions live. Our speakers are going to be joining us in just a moment, but first I want to tell you how you can participate in tonight's telephone town hall meeting. Press 0 on the keypad if you have a question. Press 0 on your keypad if you have a question. From there, you'll be placed in a queue, and our operators will assist you in asking your question live on the air. Our speakers are going to answer as many questions as they possibly can in the time that we have set aside tonight. I also want to let you know that if you have a question but you'd prefer not to go live on the air, you can just let your operator know, and we can read the question for you, whatever's most comfortable for you. Also invite you to press 7 on your keypad to submit your email address to get the very latest news and updates from the California High Speed Rail Authority. We've had some new friends and neighbors join us, so I'm going to repeat part of this message before I turn the call over to our hosts in just one moment. But on this telephone town hall tonight, we're going to be answering your questions live on the California High Speed Rail Authority Burbank to Los Angeles project section. Our speakers are standing by. They'll be joining us in just a moment, but first I want to remind you and tell you how you can join our call by participating by asking a question. Just simply hit 0 on your keypad if you have a question. Hit 0 on your keypad if you have a question. From there, you'll be placed in a queue, and one of our operators will assist you in asking your question live on the air. We're going to take as many questions as we possibly can tonight, and if by chance you have a question but would prefer not to go live on the air, just let your operator know and we can read the question for you, whatever's most comfortable for you. You can also press 7 to submit your email address to get the very latest news and updates from the California High Speed Rail Authority. So hit 7 on your keypad at any time. Now, before I turn the call over to our speakers, I want to let you know that this call will be recorded and that all questions asked this evening will not be considered an official public comment. You can also visit meethsrsocal.org for more information. With that, I will turn the call over to Heno Beva Arellano. Please take it away.
Excellent, Ivan. Thank you. And good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining our telephone town hall today for the Burbank to Los Angeles project section. We are most excited to have you join us. While many public agencies have moved to a completely virtual digital online public outreach, due to this pandemic we are experiencing, we thought we would also offer this tried and true method of communication, a telephone call, as a simple way to ask a question without a high-tech device. In fact, this is the second telephone town hall we have hosted for the Burbank to Los Angeles project section, so we are pleased to have another one this evening. So welcome to all of you who have joined us before, and any of you who are joining us for the first time, we're so happy to have you. Again, as Ivan mentioned, my name is Heno Beva Arellano, and I'm a member of the authority's public outreach team. I will serve as the facilitator of the call today. First, I will provide you with a brief background about the Burbank to Los Angeles project section, which is what we are talking about today. Second, I'll introduce our authority panelists or speakers who are ready to answer your questions as you have them. Finally, at the end of the call, I will provide you with some important information on how to submit a formal public comment, where to go to get additional information, and our next steps. I recommend, if you don't already, to have a pen and paper handy to jot down some additional information that I'll be providing you throughout the call. Everything is available on our website, and this is the first piece of information, if you don't already have it, to jot down. Our website address is meethsrsocal.org, as Ivan mentioned. Again, I'll repeat that a few times. It's meethsrsocal.org. That is the letters meethsrsocal.org. I want to emphasize a few key points of information during call today, so please be ready to jot that down along with some additional information. So now I'd like to provide you some background on the California High Speed Rail Authority. As many of you know, the California High Speed Rail program has been in the planning stages for many years, actually since the 1990s. In 2008, California voters passed Proposition 1A, which allowed it to move forward with planning and obtaining funding for construction. Steadily, the project has moved forward, and the first phase is already under construction in California's Central Valley. Here in Southern California, besides making early investments into the rail and transportation infrastructure that will support high-speed trains, we are completing the required environmental documents on four of the project sections between Bakersfield all the way to Anaheim in order for Southern California to be ready for future construction. Today, we specifically are discussing the Burbank to Los Angeles project section, which is one of these four sections here in Southern California. And it will provide a vital 14-mile link between Burbank Airport and Los Angeles Union Station. Now a little bit about the environmental document that is now available for your review and our process. So the draft environmental document for this project has been out for public review since Friday, May 29th, so a couple of months now. Formal comments on this document are due by Monday, August 31st, 2020. By popular demand, this public comment period has been extended now twice, and all formal comments are now due on Monday, August 31st. So we have a little bit more time still. Today is the 19th, a few more weeks remaining for you to provide us your formal public comments. The environmental document and all of the information surrounding the Burbank to Los Angeles project is available at the website that we've been mentioning, meethsrsocal.org. As I mentioned, we'll be making reference to this website repeatedly, so be sure to check it out to find out the information you are looking for. However, if you prefer to call us, please do. The Burbank to Los Angeles project section has a helpline, and that number, if you want to jot it down, is 877-977-1660. Please give us a call, and our staff is happy to help you in any way that we can. We want you to know that the authority has conducted extensive outreach to affected parties, local elected officials, our community and business stakeholders, environmental agencies, and the public at large. And tonight's additional telephone town hall is another step toward this extended outreach. We want to make sure the public knows about this very important milestone and knows how to give us formal comments. Also, we want you to know that during this formal comment period that, again, ends on Monday, August 31st, the authority staff is also making themselves available during office hours. These have been going very well. This has been done over the past few weeks and months since the public comment period has opened. So we encourage you to make an appointment with us if there's something more specific you would like to ask a question about. And you can sign up for these appointments, again, through the website at meethsrsocal.org, or just give us a call. The number again is 877-977-1660, and you can do it that way to request an appointment. I would like to share with you that we are targeting the following days and times for these office hours, including the following 4 days. This Thursday, August 20th, from 12 noon to 2 o'clock p.m. Next week, Monday, August 24th, from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Next Wednesday, August 26th, from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. And also next Thursday, August 27th, from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And again, if these times do not work for you, please let us know by giving us a call, and we'll be happy to accommodate you. As Ivan mentioned, this phone call is being recorded. However, it is intended purely to provide you with answers to your questions, and it is not a formal method of obtaining your public comment on the project. At the end of the call, I will be reminding you or sharing with you the additional ways for you to provide a public comment. So again, please have your pencil ready to go to identify how to do that. During this call, we'll make sure to make it clear how to submit your formal comments. Also for you to know, this phone call is being interpreted simultaneously in Spanish on a separate phone line. We have staff there who are taking their questions as well, which will be answered here in English and interpreted back to our Spanish-speaking audience on that line. If you are so interested, their separate phone line for the Spanish interpretation is 844-881-1317. I'll repeat this very quickly in Spanish. Si algunos de ustedes prefieren escuchar esta llamada en español, por favor llame al número 844-881-1317. Very good. Now, I would like to introduce our speakers, and then I will hand it back to Ivan to receive your questions. Today, we have six individuals of the Burbank to Los Angeles project team ready to answer your questions. I will ask each of them to introduce themselves so that you can be familiar with their voices. So, Bruce, I would like to ask you to start us off with your self-introduction.
Good evening. My name is Bruce Armstead. I'm Director of Operations and Maintenance for the California High-Speed Rail Authority.
Excellent. Diane?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Diane Ricard, and I am the Project Manager for High-Speed Rail on the Burbank to Los Angeles High-Speed Rail Project section.
Thank you, Diane. Now, Tyler, would you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Tyler Bonstead here. I'm the project manager for the consultant team that's been preparing the engineering and environmental work for this section.
Great. And Rob, can you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, everyone. I'm Rob McCann with the project environmental team.
Beautiful. Shirley, if you can please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Shirley Parker. I'm Associate Deputy Director for Real Property Statewide. Thank you.
Great, Shirley. Thank you. And Jen, if you can please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. This is Jen Labrado with the Public Outreach Team.
Excellent. Thank you, Jen. I think we got that. So I think we had this issue last time. I'm hearing the Spanish interpreter. If we can take one moment to make sure that that line is separated out. Okay, very good. Thank you. Again, thanks, everyone, for joining us on this evening's phone call. We are scheduled for a one-hour phone call. If we need to take additional time to continue answering your questions, we are happy to do that. So let's get right to it. Ivan, I'll put the program back to you, and let's proceed with our questions.
All right, very good, folks. Thank you for joining us this evening. We'd like to hear from you. This forum is designed for you to ask questions, so please hit zero on your keypad if you have a question. Hit zero on your keypad if you have a question, and we'll be able to take your questions live. We do have a question that came in, so we will go for our first question, and that is, where can I access a copy of the draft environmental document and all the supplemental information? And Diane or Henoveva, would you like to answer that question?
Sure, I'd be happy to answer it. The draft environmental document and all of its reports and volumes is available on the authority's website. Again, it can be accessed at meethsrsocal.org. It's a special website set up specifically surrounding the release and availability of this environmental document. So we encourage you all to please go there. It's organized by station areas or topic areas, and at the very bottom of the website, the landing page that you'll go to, you can see at the very bottom, obtain environmental documents, and you can open that up. It's organized by volume, and as you can imagine, it's voluminous. So please look at it, but all the files are available for viewing online and can be downloaded if you so choose.
Thank you very much. Our next question is the draft environmental document available in any additional languages?
So, hi, this is Diane Ricard. The draft environmental document has a 75-page executive summary, which is available in, I believe, 7 languages in addition to English. Hanno, do you have the list of the languages by any chance?
I can pull it up right now, and I'll be sure to announce that before we get off the phone.
But the full environmental document is not, but the 75-page executive summary, which has a lot of information in it, is available in numerous other languages.
All right. We will take our next question. This is Barbara in Los Angeles. And Bruce, this is a question for you. Go ahead, Barbara.
My name is Barbara Davis. I am a retiree from the public Los Angeles Library. I know that you guys are going to build like a rolling something like that, or you guys are going to build something. I want to know how long is it going to take before you guys finish it?
Barbara, thank you for that question. Our current business plan says that we'll be in service by 2033. However, we have a number of financial challenges with getting the funding for us to build from Bakersfield on down to Los Angeles. We right now have work going on in the Central Valley, and we expect to run our Central Valley interim service sometime in 2028. So you'll be able to see and touch a high-speed train 2028-2029 timeframe. But the project in Southern California is scheduled in our business plan to be completed in 2033. However, that is what we call a financially unconstrained plan, meaning if we got all the money that we have, that we need, we'd be able to build it on that timeline.
Thank you. This is Stuart calling in. Stuart, go ahead with your question. Bruce, he has a question for you.
Hello. Can you hear me okay? Hello?
Yes, we hear you great.
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My first reaction is with all the money we've been spending, and I'm sure we're looking forward to a lot of cuts and programs next year, can we really afford to do something like this at this time? That's my question.
Okay. And that's an interesting question, Stuart. We've been charged by the voters in Prop 1A in 2009 to build the high-speed rail system. And at that time, they gave us about one-third of the money that we needed. But we have a legislative requirement to move forward with the project, and that's just where we are. We have a mandate, and we move forward with our project because we've been directed by the legislature to do so.
And
thank
Ivan,
you.
If you don't mind, if Go I can ahead. Jump in, I wanted to just circle back to the previous question about the availability of the executive summary in the multiple languages. So as Diane mentioned, the executive summary, which is still 75 pages, but it's a very good overview of the entire document. It is available in multiple languages besides English, including Arabic, Armenian, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Spanish, Tagalog, and Vietnamese. So we want to make sure that if those languages are of interest to anyone or our communities, it is available. We're happy to get that to you. And it is available on the website.
Okay, thank you. We had a question that came in from our Spanish line that I'll read here. And in the meantime, while I'm bringing up that question, folks, if you have a question you'd like to ask, hit 0 on your keypad. Please hit 0 on your keypad now if you have a question. We also have operators standing by that can take down your email address if you'd like to hit 7. The question that came in from the Spanish line, this is Joel calling in from Los Angeles. He says, how can I know past what streets the fast rail will pass, and how can I get a copy of that?
Tyler, I think that you are going to take this one.
Okay, yeah, I'll start with just the general idea of where the alignment runs. So it starts at the north end for this project at Burbank Airport, and then follows the existing railroad tracks that run south of the airport, basically near Van Owen Street, Victory Boulevard. It turns mainly heading south and runs through Burbank, Glendale, and Los Angeles, for the most part within a block or two of San Fernando Road. So along those existing railroad tracks there, when you get down to the Lincoln Heights, Cypress Park area, it then follows along the Los Angeles River, and there's current railroad tracks on both sides of the river there, and comes into downtown and ends at Union Station near Cesar Chavez Street and Alameda. As part of this work, there would be six new bridges built, either over or under the tracks, which we call grade separations, and which our environmental document provides design and environmental impacts for. And going from the north to the south, those are at Buena Vista Street in Burbank, Sonora Avenue in Glendale, Grandview in Glendale, Flower in Glendale, Chevy Chase and Goodwin on the Glendale-Los Angeles border, and Main Street in Lincoln Heights. So that's generally an idea of where the alignment goes. Like I said, for the most part, it follows the existing railroad tracks for that entire way from Burbank to Los Angeles and is building new tracks and improving the bridges in the area.
Okay, our next question is, this is someone who's wondering about more specific questions about the environmental document. They're wondering if there's a way to schedule a meeting with members of the project team. Heno, can you take that, please?
Sure. What we would like to do is have you give us a call and schedule an office visit or an office appointment with us. Please call us at 877-977-1660. Leave us a message and let us know when would be available good days and times for you to do this. I'll repeat the standing times that we have coming up. So if one of those work, we already know for sure that staff is available during that time. So again, we would be happy to meet with you on Thursday, August 20th from 12 to 2 o'clock. That's this Thursday. That would be tomorrow. Next Monday, August 24th from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Or next Wednesday, August 26th from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. Or next Thursday, August 27th from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. You can schedule that appointment directly if you'd like on the Meet HSRSoCal.org website, and just go down to the bottom, schedule office visit or office appointment, and those available dates would come up. Or again, just give us a phone call. We very much would encourage and appreciate answering questions or working with you one-on-one to address whatever information you may need. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is Kimberly calling in from Burbank. Kimberly, go ahead with your question, and Bruce is ready to stand by and ask to answer for you.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Luce, calling from Burbank, and I was interested in one. I was wondering about kind of the effect of coronavirus on your current plans. Are you guys looking at kind of how your trains are designed or how your stations are designed in light of coronavirus to ask yourselves if there's something that should be changed so that if there is another pandemic down the line, you don't need to necessarily have another bailout of another transportation service or even taking the service offline that has become valuable to people's transportation needs?
Kimberly, that's a very good question. We've experienced most of our impacts in where we're doing the construction work, and we are relooking at some of the way we do ridership and revenue forecasting. As far as the design of the trains, of course, we're all learning something new every day when it comes to this COVID-19 situation. So, yes, we will be looking at and rethinking the design of our interiors, the design of our stations, the design of all our passenger facilities in light of this new new normal that we have to live with. So I hope that answers your question, but we are looking at different ways of doing things in all aspects of our project.
Thank you. Our next question is, how noisy will the high-speed rail be in comparison to the Metrolink? Rob, can you answer that for us?
Sure. So the trains themselves would not be as loud as the Metrolink diesel trains. Remember, for the high-speed rail trains, these will be electrically powered trains. So the trains themselves would not be as loud. And the authority's website actually has a very good fact sheet about noise that is published on the authority's website. And then the description of the noise effects of the train, the high-speed train along with the Metrolink trains is described in the noise section of the draft EIR EIS.
Thank you so much, Rob. Folks, we're taking your questions. We enjoy doing this, so please hit zero on your keypad if you have a question. We would love to answer them for you, so hit zero. Up next, we're going to take Fernando from Atwater Village. Fernando, go right ahead.
Hello. Hi. I'm trying to find out, well, good evening, and I'm glad you're giving us information. How much longer will you guys take to install this speed rail so we can ride it? You guys have been saying that from 2016 it would be have been completed in 2016, but it hasn't. Another question is, other countries, like third world countries, they have these speed rails in place. I've been to Germany, I've been to Europe, Asia. Even China, to me, is considered a third world country, but yet they have these high-speed rails. Phenomenal. But we're California. We are a rich nation. We are a rich state. I don't understand why we don't have something like that in place yet. We're in 2020. Why does it take so long for something to get done in California? Where's all that tax money going to? We're backward. I don't get it. We should be leading the world in this, in technology and everything.
All right. Bruce, can you answer that for us?
Okay. I'll give it a shot. Fernando, as you mentioned, it is taking a little longer than we thought. And a lot of that is because we are funding constrained by the state and feds and other funding sources. However, we have made significant progress in the Central Valley, and we are at a point where we're forecasting to have a high-speed train up and running by late 2028, early 2029. So you will be able to see a high-speed train in the Central Valley in 2028, 2029. So that's where we are with our project. We have civil works under construction that's building the test track and what will become our revenue service infrastructure. With regard to our position as a nation, we as Americans just don't have the interest in railroading that other countries have had. And not to be too philosophical, but we were building highways when they were building railroads in those countries that you've mentioned that have high-speed trains. So we just took a different path to develop our infrastructure.
Thank you very much. We're going to take our next caller. This is Gina calling in from Glendale. And Tyler, if you can help Gina with her question. Go ahead, Gina.
Hi, my name is Gina Brown, and I live in Glendale. Thank you for having us on the call this evening. My question, I'm not sure if it's directed towards Bruce or Diane, but my concern is about the amount of bridges you are going to add in the Glendale area. I'm curious to know the impact on traffic and the businesses surrounding that, the building of that? Is it along San Fernando, or how? What does that look like?
Sure. So this is Tyler, and I can speak to that. There's a number of bridges planned in the corridor, both completely new ones, which we call new grade separations, and going through new ones and also modifications to existing ones, like say at Colorado, where you have a bridge the railroad going over the roadway already, and we'd need to add another track or two next to the existing tracks. So you're right in that there would be effects on traffic and business during construction. We talk to the traffic-related impacts quite a bit in our transportation section of the environmental document, which is 3.2. And we also talk to our business impacts in the document as well. And we've talked a lot about those in section 3.12, which is socioeconomics. And in general, we have plans that we will be putting together during construction to try to minimize traffic and business impacts. One of the things we're definitely looking at is trying to stagger having to, say, close roadways across the tracks so that there's not as much of an impact on detours for traffic and things like that. And then ultimately, I think there'll be a beneficial impact on traffic once the project is done, because now every time a train comes through the crossing, the gates have to come down and traffic stops at those crossings. Whereas once this goes in, there'll be the grade separated crossings, which will allow people to go under the tracks or over the tracks at all times. So we get into detail in the document on those two issues, and it's definitely an important one we've been looking at into a lot of detail for this project.
Thanks, Tyler. And we've got another question for you, so stay right close by. This is Angelica. Go ahead, Angelica, who's calling in from Atwater. Go ahead with your question, please. You know, actually, I'm going to read Angelica's question. She's wondering if during the construction, what are the options for pedestrians and for buses and for emergency situations?
So this is Tyler. I'll talk to that one, too, and it's pretty similar to the response to the last question. We do have a plan to deal with those issues during construction, so both bus and pedestrian going across the right-of-way and emergency vehicles. And like I said, one of the, I think, most important pieces of it is making sure that there are regular crossings of the corridor that are open while construction is going on. So we wouldn't go through and try to, during the construction process, close down a bunch of those crossings at the same time. And I think a good example, actually, in the Atwater area is Chevy Chase, which is currently where the roadway crosses the tracks at grade, and then Goodwin Avenue, which is a bit further to the north there. And our thoughts in this area is to have a grade separation go in at Goodwin in the future. And likely what we'd look at from a construction staging standpoint is making sure that Chevy Chase stays open during construction until Goodwin is complete, the new bridge there. And then in that case, folks can use the new Goodwin Bridge or the Los Feliz Boulevard Bridge to the south while then the construction goes on at Chevy Chase. So we have a detailed look at how we can phase those different options to try to minimize those impacts of people trying to get across the tracks.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Maggie. Go ahead with your question, Maggie, and Jen is standing by to answer it for you.
Hello. Hi. I'm a community college student, and I saw on your website that there's only six universities listed within the I Will Ride campaign. And I just wanted to know, like, how will you guys further connect to, like, my generation and the younger people to continue to support your project? Because I know that I'm a commuter student, and that a lot more students will be taking this once it will be completed. So I just wanted to know, like, what your guys' other options are for your community outreach.
Great. That's a great question, Maggie. And we've found that college and university students are some of the most enthusiastic stakeholders for California High-Speed Rail. As you know, the project itself is within good proximity to Glendale Community College as well as a number of universities. So one, it's connectivity and engaging with those campuses to make sure that both administration and students are aware that the project's being developed. We've done a number of Speaker Bureau events, and we've tabled in community quads just to build awareness from the student population. And then, as you mentioned, there are a number of I Will Ride chapters that have popped up at universities. It sounds like you've visited our website, but in case anyone else is interested, you can find more information about the I Will Ride program at hsr.ca.gov/I Will Ride. And that's a good place to start. And if there's not currently a chapter open at your campus, we definitely encourage you to get involved if that's of interest, and we're happy to be of help kind of walking you through the process of how that can happen. And then also we continue to look for opportunities to spread the word in terms of press releases to university papers, just building whatever awareness we can within the college community.
Thank you for that. Our next question is for Heno Beva, and the question is about the official comments. And the question is, what steps to submitting an official comment regarding this project section? What are the steps, please?
Yes, thank you, Ivan. It's very simple, but I will outline four different ways that a formal public comment can be submitted on the Burbank to LA draft environmental document. Again, I'll reiterate, this needs to be done by Monday, August 31st. But there's plenty of time and multiple ways that a formal public comment can be submitted. First, our tried and true method of mail. So you can mail your written comment, letter, postcard, whatever you would like to send by U.S. mail to this address, to the attention of Burbank to Los Angeles draft EIR EIS comment. The address is 355 South Grand Avenue, Suite 2050, Los Angeles, California 90071. This mailing address is the California High Speed Rail Authority offices in downtown Los Angeles, and that's the mailing address where you can submit your comment. Secondly, as we've been mentioning, you can submit your comment electronically through a form on the authority's website. If you go to the meethsrsocal.org website, at the very bottom, there are a set of quick links, and you can choose the link to comment on the document, and it will take you to the screen to explain that you can actually comment on the document using multiple forms in different languages. As we've mentioned, we have multiple languages available. So you choose the authority's website, choose the appropriate language, and submit your comment electronically. A lot of folks choose to do it that way as we become obviously very dependent, and it's so convenient to use electronic mail. So please submit your comment if you choose through that form on the authority's website. You can also send your an email and not use the form on the authority website. So from your own email address, if you'd like to email us directly, you can do that. The email address that you can put in your the send to box would be burbank_losangeles@hsr.ca.gov. Let me repeat that email address because there is there are a few one underscore and a couple of periods in this address. So it's spelled out by the following: burbank_los.angeles@hsr.ca.gov. That's the email address, and again, it's burbank_los.angeles angeles@hsr.ca.gov. And you can send an email directly. You can also upload a document to your email or attach a document and submit it. Some folks write on their own stationary letterhead, scan it, sign it, and submit it. All of that is welcome, again, by Monday, August 31st. And then finally, you can provide a verbal comment on the telephone hotline, again, in any language. And again, that phone number directly is 877-977-1660. All of these are equal ways of submitting a comment. There's no priority one over the other, so choose whichever one is most convenient to you. What we do ask, again, is that you do so by Monday, August 31st. Ivan?
Thank you, Hino. Our next caller is Lourdes. Lourdes calling in from Los Angeles. She's got a question for Rob and Bruce. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead with your question, please.
Hello?
Lourdes, Lourdes, go ahead with your question. We can hear you.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't know you guys were listening. So I had a few concerns, but the main one, or there's a couple, but first of all, because of the area that we're living in, there are some faults underground and some major faults, and I'm looking at the document, and it looks like some of them are part of the route that is chosen is going to have to deal with some digging into, you know, mountainsides or hillsides. And what are you doing in order to make that safe as possible? Because it, you know, a big one's going to hit. So what extra precautions are you taking in terms of that? I also had a financial question in terms of you guys are having trouble with the funding, and I get that there's a mandate that you guys were given funding to start this, but what are you going to do to ensure that the project actually gets completed? Because we have heard of projects that get started, they have funding, but for some reason don't get completed because there is a lack of funding. So are you there has to be a healthy balance with, between the safety and the economic cost of this. So what are you guys actually doing to balance both of those? In addition to the ecological healthiness of the environment and the people as well, because this is going to be going through people's homes, and some of these areas are low-income areas. So you know, it's a difficult balance. So how are you planning or, you know, who else are you going to involve in this to help balance the environmental, the economical, and the physical balance here?
Okay, well, thank you, Lourdes. This is Rob. I'll go ahead and start with answering your questions related to the environment. And then I think Bruce is probably best qualified to address your question about funding. First, with your concern regarding fault lines, yes, certainly that's something any project in California needs to address, both during, you know, in its project design and in construction and in its operation. In our environmental documents, section 3.9 is our section where we thoroughly address geology and seismic hazards. And we talk about a number of different design features that the authority will implement to ensure protection, you know, of the project or sound design. Many of these, as far as structural design, those sorts of design standards have been developed and keep evolving over the years, particularly with all the work that Caltrans has done on the state highway system. With regard to environmental concerns, the authority is working in close partnership with various state and federal agencies, such as the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, other agencies like U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, all the different federal and state agencies that are responsible for overseeing and protecting the environment. And so with regards to, for instance, construction, the authority is very committed to using the latest, what the US EPA refers to as Tier 4 construction equipment, which have the very lowest emission output of construction equipment. And it's an ongoing process where they'll continue to look for ways to continue to reduce the project's effect on the environment. So there's definitely a lot more information on that with regards to throughout the document, particularly for construction emissions. If you look at Section 3.3, we have quite an extensive discussion of that. And on the local level, the authority is working closely with the South Coast Air Quality Management District to ensure we're using best practices to protect the public from emissions during construction. So I hope that helps a little bit. And Bruce, I'll hand it off to you to address your question regarding the funding and the financing.
Okay. Funding, we have the funding, well, I guess your question on funding and how do we make sure that we have all the funding to build what we need. And that really speaks to how public works projects are funded in this country using federal and state money, and in California specifically. What they guard against is you can't start a segment unless it's a usable segment. And to put a finer point on that, our governor told us to build our project in building blocks or steps, which require us to have a usable piece of infrastructure before we can move on to the next piece, or quite frankly, before we can start the work, we have to identify all the funding to finish the work. So our infrastructure in the Central Valley that's being built, we're building a segment that will be usable for passenger rail service, and then we go on and build the next segment that will be usable for a passenger rail service, and then we'll connect those two segments and go on to build the next one. So our funding rules don't allow for us to start something and to build just a piece of railroad won't be usable because we ran out of funding. That's just not the way the rules work. We have to identify all the funding to complete the project with the necessary what we call contingencies or margins or extra pad or, you know, money in the bank that'll cover any extras that that may happen. So that there's not we have too many funding rules around our funding for a project to be started and not finished. That's just not how it works. So I can't think of anything else to say other than the rules just don't allow for us to start a project and not have identified the funding to finish a usable segment of the asset.
Thank you very much for that. We've got another question here. This is Maria calling in. Tyler, she's got a question for you. So, Maria, go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a question on the destroying property, or not destroying property, but homes. Will there be the need to destroy homes in order to bring in the railway? I mean, I understand that in some parts there will be, well, the whole way, I believe it's adding a new railway. It's not using the existing train railway, or is it?
Sure. So let me speak to that. In general, we are going to be we're going to be adding two new tracks to where the existing railroad is now, which for the most case is two tracks. But there is space within the land that is owned in most cases by Metro to add those two tracks without having to acquire additional right-of-way, such as say houses or businesses. So adding the two tracks, for the most part, we just stay within the railroad owned land already. There are places where we do have to acquire additional right-of-way. They are mainly focused in station areas and in the areas where we'd be doing grade separations, which is new bridges over or under the tracks. And in that case, we have some different chapters within the document that discuss what the acquisitions are, in addition to the impact to housing and to businesses and jobs. And they're pretty limited, I would say, in scope. And so it's not along the entire corridor. It's just in some of those key areas where, like I said, we have stations, new roadways, or in some cases, some new facilities for things like the electrical power for the train or the switches that are needed to switch back and forth. And so that is dealt with in our environmental document. We have some appendices as well that show where those property acquisitions would be proposed, as well as on the website that Genoveva mentioned earlier. There's basically a searchable map there that you can go through and take a look at and see the relationships, say, of your house or of your business to the project. And it has color coding to give an idea of the property impacts of the project as well.
Thank you, Tyler. Next up, we have Melanie calling in from Sun Valley. Melanie, go ahead with your question for Genoveva and Tyler.
Hi, my name is Melanie. I'm calling from Sun Valley. I think Maria, the previous phone call, did answer a lot of my questions because I, too, was calling about property acquisition, but also the impact on one specific neighborhood where the maps tend to be a little vague as to whether or not there is going to be impact. And I'm talking specifically about the Lehigh neighborhood, which is Penrose Street to the northwest, Sunland Boulevard to the southwest, and the 5 Freeway to the south. Sunland Boulevard to southeast, excuse me, and the Golden State Freeway to the south. The train tracks run on San Fernando Road, which is on the opposite side of the Golden State Freeway of this particular neighborhood. But in all the maps I see, it's a little vague whether it is underground, elevated, or whatnot. Perhaps I'm a little selfish in asking, but I'm just curious to know what will be the impact in this particular neighborhood.
Melanie, thank you for your question. And the reason why it's a little vague, you're not seeing things, is because that community area or that geographic area is actually to the north of Burbank, if I'm not mistaken, Sun Valley and the Lehigh area and Penrose near the 5 is actually part of the project section of the high-speed rail program that is to the north of this section. That section is called the Palmdale to Burbank project section. And it has a separate schedule and a separate set of maps and separate set of information that will be communicated out just like we're doing today on the Burbank to Los Angeles section. We will be doing that separately for Palmdale to Burbank. But while I have you, I should let you know that more specific information will be available once that draft environmental document will be released, which currently is scheduled for next summer of 2021. So the Palmdale to Burbank section, in fact, as I was mentioning earlier, there's four different sections here in Southern California. The first one is Bakersfield to Palmdale. That environmental document has already been out and is under final environmental document review. The second section to come out is this section, the Burbank to Los Angeles section, which is under public comment currently, which is why we're having today's call. And that, again, that comment period ends August 31st. And then the Palmdale to Burbank section, as I mentioned, will be out next year. There's another section of between Los Angeles and Anaheim that will be out later this year as well. So check back with us and follow. And if you don't already have it, look on the authority's website and at the Palmdale to Burbank project section information. And it also has its separate helpline, a separate email address, and you can sign up to receive those notices as that project moves into the formal public comment period. But also you can receive notices on any public information or other virtual meetings that will be held in advance on that. But I can have Tyler speak to a little bit about what the design aspects in terms of staying on the tracks or going under the freeway on that section, just to give you what we know a little bit about that at this point. Go right ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, so I don't know too much since it's not our section, but I can basically say that with our coordination with that team that's designing the Palmdale to Burbank section to the north, to the best of my understanding, they are proposing to stay next to the existing railroad tracks. So basically following along San Fernando Road, past Vulcan Materials under the freeway, and then basically diving into a tunnel in the area around Sunland Boulevard, which then takes them under the airport runway and then into the station at Burbank Airport there, which is where our project picks up. But I haven't seen anything with my coordination lately that shows project elements north of the freeway by Penrose or Lehigh or places like that.
Great. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you very much. We're going to take our next question from Sherry. Sherry's calling in from Burbank, and Sherry, Shirley is going to answer your question. Also, folks, if you've got a question, a reminder to hit zero on your keypad if you have a question. Sherry, you're up.
Oh. Hi, good evening, everybody. I apologize if this question's already been asked and answered. I may have come in on the end of an answer, but I'm curious how many private residences are going to be impacted by this project and how that will be handled. In other words, is there going to be an issue of eminent domain being taken to be able to make space or make way for your current line map?
Cherie, this is Shirley Parker from Real Property. Anytime any property is required, if we're talking about residential properties, the properties are appraised. We make offers to purchase the property, and we come to terms with the property owner. They will look for a replacement unit. This would be for owner-occupied residential units or tenant-occupied units. And along with the purchase price, an owner's entitled to a purchase differential, which is an additional fund made available to them to find a replacement property in the market. And the additional funds through relocation are also made available to tenants to find replacement apartment units or you know, whatever type of dwelling they're looking to relocate to. And we provide assistance with that. We provide assistance with moving as well, in that we pay for residential moves. You can go with a commercial mover. You can do a self move. And we have relocation agents that assist with both owners and tenants in finding replacement housing.
Shirley, this
Thank
is Tenebeva. If I can just ask you to be specific about how eminent domain, if I understand it correctly, would only be used if an agreement is arrived upon.
Right. We try to negotiate with property owners and come to a settlement without using the eminent domain process, but that is available to us, but that is the very or last tool in our toolbox that we use. If you want me to explain the process, I can do that. But we typically negotiate to a settlement with property owners. I don't think we've gone through the courts to acquire any residential units.
Excellent. Thank you for clarifying that.
And this is Tyler here. I guess I'll just note the number of residential units that we are forecasting to be affected by this project is pretty small. So if you look in section 3.12 of the document that focuses on socioeconomics and communities, it shows there that we are basically showing six single family residential displacements for the project and six multifamily. So 12 units total. So we've really been trying to focus on staying within our right of way and minimizing any impacts to residential properties.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tyler in from Daryl in Sun Valley, and I'm going to read Daryl's question for Tyler. His question is, will there be any negative impacts on home values for the homes that are along the railway? Also, what will you do to control the noise from the train?
Sure. So I'll speak first to what we'll do to control the noise, and I think that'll kind of play into the home value question there. Basically, the noise, we have a section that really deals with that in detail, and that is section 3.4 for noise and vibration, and it gives an idea of the impacts for both operation and construction from noise. And I think Rob talked to it earlier, but in general, the high-speed trains are electrically powered and fairly quiet compared to diesel locomotives that you might see from the freight trains or Metrolink trains going by now. And there's a number of mitigation measures where we do think there are potential noise impacts for the project. Those can include things like sound walls in certain areas or special track insulation or house insulation to basically get those impacts down to a level that hopefully less than significant. When it comes to the impact of the project on home values, that's not something that we look at specifically in our environmental document. And I guess I can just say there's a lot of things that that affect the value of a home, you know, noise and other issues like that, and it's pretty complicated. So it's pretty tough for us to forecast what that would really be, frankly. So I would just recommend you take a look and see the different impacts and then try to think about how that might affect your house. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've got another question here that I'm going to read. And this is a question for Genoveva. And the question is, what happens to my comment once I have successfully submitted it to the project?
Great question. We love getting as many comments as possible on the document. Each and every one is extremely important and is processed by the team. Several of them are here with you on the call today and their staff and are all fully documented. Each one is read and a response is prepared to each and every comment or question that is received via any of the methods that I talked about earlier. It is all documented and prepared into the next public distribution of this document, which is the final environmental impact report / environmental impact statement. So the final EIR, EIS, is composed of all of the responses to comments that the authority has received from the public and all of its agencies, anyone who commented during the formal comment period. All of those responses are prepared and publicly distributed via the final EIR, EIS. And as I understand it, this takes some months to do, as you can imagine. The comments generally are quite a bit, and each one is handled very carefully and completely. So those will be available as part of a final document next year, later in 2021. I believe it's the spring to summer of 2021 next year. The authority will indicate when that document is released, and then it's available to then be brought forward in front of the authority board of directors for consideration as formal adoption. And it's at that point where the project actually gets officially approved or changed or including any other changes that might come in as a result of the comments and the final document. And it is eligible to be officially adopted as an approved project, and at that point would be available to move into final design and ultimately construction. So that is the next very important milestone that happens on the project, but it's not possible without your comments or the public's comments, and each one is treated very carefully, and that's what happens to the comment. And so you will see, if you are submitting a formal comment, you will see your comment in the document and its response, and that's how it's processed.
Thank you very much, Hannah. We appreciate that, and we appreciate everyone taking the time to join us this evening, and we thank you for your time. It's been a great call. We have just a few minutes left, and so before we wrap up, Hanno, we will turn the call over to you. I do just want to let folks know that if you have a question that you were not able to get answered, or you have a comment, again, not an official comment, but something you'd like to share or have a return call back on, just stay on the call till to stay on the line until the end of the call, and then we will be able to you'll be able to leave a voicemail, and we can reach back out to you. We're going to take one more call before we sign off for the evening. This is Sarkis calling in from Burbank, and he's got a question for Bruce. Sarkis, go ahead, please.
Yes, good evening, everyone. My question is, if this project was already funded, and secondly, has it been contracted to a builders to break ground?
Well, we have construction underway in the Central Valley. We have three construction packages, CP1, CP2, 3, and CP4. So that work is underway. And as I mentioned, that's our first, it'll be our first operating segment from, I want to say, Merced to Bakersfield is what we project in our business plan. So we have broken ground. Civil works are underway. And if you go to our website, you can see pictures of all the construction that's being done and how much progress we made. There's some pretty cool videos, and there's also statements of the status of all the environmental documents, including the one that we're talking about today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you. And we'll turn the call over to Henoveva to bring us to the finish line. Henoveva, take it away, please.
Very good. Thank you so much, Ivan, and to all of you this evening for joining us on tonight's telephone town hall regarding the Burbank to Los Angeles project section of the California High-Speed Rail program. It's a very important section, and we're very interested in having your input, so thank you for joining us this evening. We hope that this has been helpful for you to get your questions answered and to ready yourself for a public comment on this environmental document if you so choose. Again, today's session has been purely informational and hopefully helpful, and not as a formal method of obtaining your public comment on the project. Our session has been recorded, but is not a formal method of your comments on the document. So please remember, all the information in relation to the high-speed rail program and this environmental document is completely available to you online, which really is the best way to review and obtain it. If you do not have internet access, please call us at 877-977-1660, and we can help you get what you need. Again, during our formal comment period, the 30 staff are available during office hours. You can sign up through the website. Again, that website that is specific to this project is meethsrsocal.org. Again, that's meethsrsocal.org. It's specific to this project section, has the environmental document in all of its volumes. It has our comment forms and all the multiple languages of the executive summary and a lot of other information and helpful videos. So please visit it and obtain all the information regarding the project that way. Or, of course, give us a call and we can help you navigate and provide you the information that you need. I would like to remind you that we have the following four dates available for targeted office hours with you. Give us a call or schedule an appointment with us online at the meethsrsocal.org website. Those available dates right now are this Thursday, tomorrow, August 20th, from 12 noon to 2 o'clock p.m., next Monday, August 24th, from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., next Wednesday, August 26th, from 1 o'clock p.m. to 3 o'clock p.m., and next Thursday, August 27th, from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Once again, we request that you provide your formal public comment to us no later than Monday, August 31st, this year. And again, I'll review with you the four different ways that you can choose to submit your comment to us, and all of them are equal and will be processed in the same way. First, by mail, you can send it to the attention of the Burbank to Los Angeles draft EIR-EIS comment at the California High-Speed Rail Authority office, 355 South Grand Avenue, Suite 2050, Los Angeles, California, 90071. You can also submit your comment via the authority's electronic form on its website. You can obtain that at the meethsrsocal.org website. Just go to the quick link at the bottom to comment on the document and follow the instructions to obtain the form in the language that you prefer. You can also submit your formal comment directly by email. And the email address, again, is burbank_loss.angeles@hsr.ca.gov. Again, that's burbank_loss.angeles@hsr.ca.gov. And make sure to put in the subject line Burbank to Los Angeles draft EIR EIS comment. We do get email at this email address on all kinds of inquiries on the project, but we want to make sure that yours is identified as a formal comment, so please do so in the subject line. And again, you can call our telephone hotline or helpline for the project section in order to give us a verbal comment. That number again is 877-977-1660. Again, the reminder is that your comment is due Monday, August 31st. You still have plenty of time. Give us a call if you have any questions. And once again, we, on behalf of the entire team here today, we thank you so much for spending your some time with us this evening. We know you have a lot of choices to be spending your time right now. We appreciate you taking the interest in informing yourself and asking questions about this very important program. Once again, thank you so much and have a good evening. Good night.